I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
This is a moment where there are no bad ideas. A no bad idea brainstorm is what I'd like to call it. And in that no bad ideas brainstorm, we talk about what we need to do and think about doing around the Electoral College. We talk about the idea of Supreme Court reform, which includes expanding the Supreme Court. We invite a conversation about multi-members districts. We talk about, look, that if we win the Senate, which we should and we will, then the Senate Judiciary Committee should have rules that they put in place so when these people come before as nominees to the Supreme Court and lie, that they are held to account and consequence, not just that somebody goes on cable news and says they lied, but that there are rules in place to actually penalize people for lying to a Senate Judiciary Committee.
Kamala Harris, and I don't think that she's speaking off the top of her head. I think that's a well-rehearsed and written speech for her because it was so clean and delivered and absolutely competent compared to her normal ramblings and her word salad. But she's making it clear that right now we're at a point to win back, to get back in control. We've got to accept all ideas. There are no bad ideas. Whatever you have, bring them to a discussion so we can see how we can win again. That includes reforming the court. In other words, stacking the court. That includes going after someone who comes to the Senate for approval to be on the Supreme Court, that if they lie, they should be prosecuted. Well, I would agree with that, Kamala, but who are you talking about? Who lied? Who lied that you're referring to? Well, she does not mention that. We also have rules for perjury against testimony in Congress. Now, I don't hear you calling out for that reference, Dr. Fake and the others who lied about the COVID situation, nor lying about the Russian collusion story. See, when she says we want to have a meeting where there are no bad ideas as to how we can win. Well, may I introduce an idea? Be fair. Oh, no. I think that could be considered, well, that's not what I had in mind. We want ideas of all kinds, and there are no bad ideas as long as it takes us to the victory in midterms and the general election to come. She was very forceful. I'm going to give her credit for that. But again, I think that was fully rehearsed. I don't think it was rambling. It was certainly not her typical word salad. And she was making some clear points. And also speaking the things that you like to keep silent. We want control again. And how we're going to do it includes reforming the Supreme Court. They're not talking about reforming it. They're talking about restacking it, adding more Supreme Court justices, blue justices, not constitutional scholars. Welcome to hour number two, Larry Connors USA. Here we are on March 15, 2026. I want to thank you for listening, by the way. I want to thank you for listening. If you're listening live now or later pulling up the podcast, always available at Newstalk STL, LarryConnorsUSA.com, LarryConnorsUSA Facebook. Or if you're watching us on our stream, because while I'm on the air right now, we are streaming video. You can watch the program by going to Newstalk STL Rumble, LarryConnorsUSA Rumble. But again, I want to thank you, because you're also spreading the word to others that this program is not just a lot of political bombasting. We lay out a lot of details, a lot of scenarios, a lot of facts. And that's not dismissing our other great programs we have on this station. But this program is built to do more than just present news, analysis, and commentary, but stressing education. You're going to leave each hour with more knowledge than you do right now. And one of the things we're going to talk about later will be of high interest to some, of no interest to others. Some will just say it's another joke. You know, when I choose stories to present to you, I try to throw a wide net, and we change gears a lot. If you're listening and then suddenly we're into another topic, that's the way we move, bullet speed. As I often say, a bull out of the gates. We got a lot to cover. And I also know that some things are more interest to you than others. Let me give you a very clear example. You're a dog lover, maybe? If I start talking about cats and the greatness of cats and things of that nature, it just goes tunes out. If I'm talking about dogs and loving dogs, you're all in. Well, every subject we present is touching someone at some level. And hopefully not tuning them out. But there are times I have to deal with something that will probably turn some people off. So be it. There are no sacred cows with this program. In our last hour, along with my guest, Gordon G. Chang, an expert on China, we were both somewhat sniping and criticizing President Trump in this last visit to Beijing, that maybe he was a little bit too diplomatic because Premier Xi was almost in his face making a clear threat regarding Taiwan. We're going to talk about again that a little bit later as to what we did get out of the meeting. But also one of the stories coming up later, there's a retired admiral, and his remarks on UFOs are suddenly sending some new shockwaves across the face of that subject. Doesn't mean they're valid. Doesn't mean they're wrong. But I'll let you hear, and we'll discuss his remarks coming from a retired admiral on UFOs later in this hour. And also, we're going to talk about a subject that is really going to be rough for some folks to listen to. Yesterday, we spent our story behind the story on the fact that that date marked when Israel became a state, a nation, recognized. And the first nation to recognize them as a nation was the USA under President Harry Truman. And of course, later the UN recognized them. But you have the Palestinian story still as well. And they point out that that started Nakba. That's their word for catastrophe. About 700,000 Palestinians, they say, slaughtered or displaced as Israel was created. This is all part of the battles and the arguments and the hate that goes back and forth. But I'm going to give it to you in a way that it's educational and you make up your own mind where the truth lies. And it might be a little bit of each. We will discuss that as we move forward. So yes, you're going to get news, analysis, commentary, and education. But once again, back to Kamala Harris on, we've got to come together, we got to find a way to win, and there are no bad ideas.
When these people come before as nominees to the Supreme Court and lie, that they are held to account and consequence, not just that somebody goes on cable news and says they lied, but that there are rules in place to actually penalize people for lying to a Senate Judiciary Committee. That we agree that it is right to have ethics rules for Supreme Court justices. And let's put those in place. Let's talk about statehood for Puerto Rico and D.C. These are the things I think that we've got to do. We've got to neutralize these red states from cheating, including blue states expanding their maps. Mm. And all of this, I think, is look, we got to fight fire with fire. These folks are playing to win.
And, of course, they have flooded blue states with illegals to get counted and census to redraw their congressional maps. And the Supreme Court the other day threw out the Louisiana redistricting because it was based on race, not population, on numbers. Each congressional district supposedly representing 750,000 to 800,000 residents. That determines how much representation they get in Congress. But if you flood the zones with illegals who aren't even allowed to vote anyway and shouldn't be here, that changes the numbers. But they don't care. And when she says there are no bad ideas, would that include the Maine Democrat Senate candidate, Graham Planter, the state of Maine, not that he is major, but running for Senate candidate Graham Planter for Maine as a Democrat, saying, I do 100% believe a political revolution is necessary. Does that fit what she's asking for? And, of course, you got Congressman Jeffries firing back because he doesn't like how he's been treated.
You ultimately lost this, and you take personal.
Who lost?
You lost in the.
Who lost? Did the voters lose?
Well, Democrats did. You're lost.
Did the voters lose?
You take personal responsibility for investing so much time and resources, tens of millions of dollars, and ultimately fruitless effort.
We did the right thing, and this effort is not over.
He's talking about again being called out for gerrymandering. So, no, we did the right thing. Then you got Congresswoman Yaya Paul going down to Cuba and reporting back that, hey, things are bad down here and we need to be doing more to help the people of Cuba. She led a 5-day congressional delegation to Cuba along with Illinois Congressman Jonathan Jackson. And she says, we need help down here. CBS raised that issue about China as well. I'm sorry, about Cuba and the fact that we have a change going on that has never been seen before, reference the U.S. and Cuba.
We did know that the Trump administration was having these secret dialogues with Cuban officials for months now. But this is a uniquely visible visit from a cabinet-level official, which suggests that there's an opening here, some momentum to leverage. Ratcliffe was dispatched to personally deliver a two-pronged message to the Cubans, one that the U.S. is offering a genuine opportunity for collaboration in order to stabilize its ailing economy, but that that window is not open indefinitely and that the president is going to enforce red lines if necessary. Exactly what the red lines are or what the changes that need to be seen are not spelled out, but the writing on the wall is that the communist government that has been in power in Cuba for decades now would need to be replaced with new leadership. Part and parcel with that would be severing the ties that we know exist between the Russian and Chinese governments that have had a political intelligence foothold in Cuba for a long, long time. All of this sounds familiar because it's almost exactly the playbook we saw in the sequence of events leading up to the capture of Maduro in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. That's a change that directly led to the energy crisis that we're now seeing in Cuba. And Ratcliffe, in the same way, made that initial visit to Caracas to deliver much the same message to the now interim president, Delcy Rodriguez.
And supposedly that's a hint, hint. Look what we did in Venezuela. Maybe you need to change what's going on here. Yalapaw of Washington said, I've received death threats for doing my job because I went down to Cuba. She did say she visited hospitals where she saw critical power outages, severe medical scarcities. Secretary of State Rubio said, we've offered the Cuban communist regime a $100 million American humanitarian assistance package to help the people. They rejected it. Leftists continue defending illegals, charged or convicted, of horrific crimes.
Cheryl Minter wants justice for her only daughter, Stephanie, a single mother from Fredericksburg, was murdered last month. The suspect, a violent repeat offender who Cheryl says should have been in prison. The man charged with stabbing Stephanie to death at a bus stop is an illegal immigrant who has been arrested dozens of times for everything from stabbings and robbery to rape. The case has gotten national attention. Before Stephanie's death, Fairfax County Police warned Descano's office in writing 3 separate times that Abdul Jallo was so dangerous that he could kill someone. But despite those warnings, Descano's office kept dropping charges and releasing him until investigators investigators say he killed Stephanie Minter.
He's talking about, in that news report, Fairfax attorney Descano letting another illegal charge with numerous crimes go free again. Congressman Jordan of Ohio has his point on this issue.
That's why I asked the morale question in light of your statement just a few months ago, where you said it's shameful that the guy beside you is not prosecuting people.
I did.
You said that?
I did.
Okay, good. Mr. Descano, why'd you change your website?
Sir, first of all, let me address what you had said.
No, you answered the questions we asked. You answered the questions we asked. I asked a simple question. Why did you change your website last month?
Well, sir, your statements about don't want to prosecute guys is absolutely false. And my policies so far in this hearing...
Are you saying what the sheriff wrote me is wrong?
No, what I'm saying is that the way that my policies have been
December 16th,
presented in this are outrageous.
She said the Commonwealth's attorney, that's you, chose not to prosecute Mr. Morales Ortiz on December 16th, and they had to release him. They had to do their job because you wouldn't prosecute. What happened on December 17th, Mr. Descano?
Well, sir, let's talk about December 16th.
No, that's the question. What happened on December
17th?
This guy murdered somebody, and I'm asking you, why did you change your website?
Because he had to clean it up, make it look better. I would still want to be up there with Jordan or others when they're talking to these people and ask you, Descano, if you're going to say these people should be free, then why don't you and other lefties having the same invalid arguments and false belief, let them stay at your house, that you'll take custody of them and they will be in your house. You'll be responsible for what they're doing. There's still not a leftist one coming forward and offering to do so, because they don't want them in their house either. They know how bad these people are. Put them back on the street and you have to deal with them. There's a new survey out regarding how many people believe the assassination attempts on Trump have been real. Pretty shocking. I'll give you details of that. And also, as I said, we will discuss Nakba, the Palestinian word for catastrophe, as to what they say happened to Palestinians when Israel became a state. Lock and load. Ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Spring weather has everyone sneezing, even inside their home or building. Instead of saying Gesundheit, call Wellington Environmental to perform air tests to determine if mold levels are too high. Gesundheit is the same as saying bless you after someone sneezes, the German word meaning wishing you good health. Wellington Environmental can perform air testing that is simple, fast, and can identify issues keeping you from having good health. Wellington does the same for hospitals and nursing homes for indoor concerns. Give them a call. It's simple. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Tell Cindy, I need air sampling. They've seen it all. They can help you. Next time you hear Gesundheit, think Wellington. Wellington Environmental. Be well with Wellington. McGuire Moving is silver certified, which means they are great at relocating senior citizens. In fact, McGuire is a household name because McGuire understands the stress involved when moving older adults. So if you or family members need help moving, I highly recommend McGuire Moving. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. Get a free in-home estimate. McGuireMoving.com. John Beale Roofing reminds you we are in the stormy season, and that means if you have even the smallest leak in your roof, you could soon have a much bigger issue. Call John Beale to make sure that your biggest investment is protected. That call can save you major dollars. If you do get hit during a storm, John Beal has a rapid response team. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF, John Beal. So many times, Vincent's Jewelers has helped me surprise someone special. Vincent's locally owned can do the same for you, and you don't have to break the bank to get something really nice, maybe even customized. The smile you're going to get back from that special someone, priceless. Check Vincent'sJewelers.com every day because new items are arriving and there are special deals. Vincent's, my only jeweler. Vincent'sJewelers.com. Vincent'sJewelers.com.
This is News Talk STL. This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA.
Today, Palestinians in Gaza and around the world are commemorating what Palestinians refer to as Nakba Day. Nakba means the catastrophe in Arabic. It was 78 years ago that some 750,000 Palestinians were violently displaced and dispossessed from hundreds of towns and villages in Palestine, thousands more killed during the creation of the State of Israel. In Gaza, Palestinians marked the grim anniversary amidst reports that Israel dramatically increased its attacks on Gaza during April, despite a U.S.-brokered ceasefire last October in the occupied West Bank. UNICEF, the United Nations Children Fund, said Israeli soldiers and settlers have killed 70 Palestinian children since early last year, amounting to around one child killed per week. Another 850 children were injured by Israeli attacks during this past year. In 1948, Mustafa al-Jazar was just 5 years old when he had to flee his village of Yibna, now Yavna, in Israel. He's now 83 and lives in a tent in Khan Yunis, Gaza.
In 1948, I was psychologically at ease in my land, in my home, with my neighbors, my siblings, my parents. Our life was comfortable, comfortable and not miserable. When we were displaced from Yibna in 1948, we entered hell, searching for water and food until the United Nations Refugee Agency set up tents and houses for us. But even then, we had some kind of stability, not like today. Today, until this very hour, is harder, much harder than our displacement in 1948, a thousand times harder.
Now, again, that is a viewpoint. I'm going to let you hear more similar viewpoints in a moment. The news source was Democracy Now!, which is a clear left-leaning, standing news source. You could even tell by the news anchor's wording, they had to live in tents. Hell, a lot of people are living in tents now, but the way she did it then was, you know, they no longer had a home. Well, a lot of people don't have a home now, not just there in that disputed area, but everywhere around the world and in our nation. But it was, again, just the slight little twist, the little phrasing, the little nuance. They had to live in tents. And then, of course, the interview included a guy who said that we had things really good until all of this started. What's he talking about? Well, they're talking about, as we discussed yesterday, when Israel became a state, recognized as a state officially, May 14th, 1948. And then the official movement, quote, displacement, following again in 1948, of the Palestinians. Now, you're going to find arguments on both sides. I want you to understand that. And you may have a contextual reference that you're going to stick with. There is a biblical reference to be included as well, that it was land that belonged to the Jews at one point as well. Israel does not officially recognize nor agree with the Palestinian narrative of Nakba. Again, that's referring to, in the word of catastrophe, the 1948 displacement of 750,000 Palestinians. Many Israeli historians accept the historical facts of displacement, but they frame it as a war of independence rather than orchestrated catastrophe. That's their viewpoint. And Israel generally avoids acknowledging Nakba to avoid responsibility for the Palestinian refugee crisis. It did happen. You can't deny that it happened. How it happened and who's to blame and where it should have started. Keep in mind, Britain had control of the area. And the state of Israel was recognized as Britain dropped their British mandate for Palestine. I'm not going to ask you to take my word on any of this. You do your own research as well, but I'm giving you both sides. Extensively yesterday on the rise of the Israeli state, and today on how, as you heard the America Now, Democracy Now! Broadcast say that this is a day Palestinians are marking as the beginning of their catastrophe. And they say it continues to this day. A Fox News digital investigation, and I always give credit to the source because they did the work, and if they're right, they deserve the credit. If it's wrong, they deserve the blame. I always look at it like that. But they found a global network of anti-Israeli activist groups mobilizing coordinated NAPCA protests across the U.S. and around the world for today, using the anniversary of Israel's founding to challenge the Jewish state right to exist. Now, I'm reading this direct from Fox. I'm not making it up. The Fox News digital investigation claims it found 425 organizations, including communist groups, Muslim advocacy organizations, anti-Israeli activist coalitions, many attributed with blatant anti-Semitism, all working, and they have a combined funding footprint of $1 billion to raise this issue. They're planning 700-plus events in almost 40 nations across the world this weekend. That includes the U.S., New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, London, and Sydney. All of this, again, will be taking place over the weekend. And they call it the NAPCA 78. They say it reflects a sinful marriage between the radical left and radical Islamists, the groups that hate Western liberal democracies and desire to destroy them. That is according to a Middle East scholar for the study of global anti-Semitism. Critics say these protests will reveal a global anti-Semitic movement that presents itself as humanitarian. I want you to hear it as presented a Palestinian writer activist view.
The Nakba is not a single passing event. It is a process that started in 1948, deliberately designed to ethnically cleanse the maximum amount of our historic Palestine, of its Palestinian population, destroy our ability to exist as a group, and establish instead Israeli Jewish presence on our lands, villages, and even the graves of our forefathers. Every act that you saw in Gaza over the last 2 years, every atrocity, the mass rape, the destruction of entire cities and villages, the wiping out of everything, the systematic capturing of people as human shields and hostages, the destruction of the basic infrastructure that holds the ability for organized human existence to last in Gaza. All of it started in 1948. The difference between then and now are two things. Israel has accelerated it 10 times as aggressively, 10 times as viciously in Gaza. The number of people they murdered is over 10 times those that were killed in 1948.
Now, again, the Israeli mainstream narrative is the plight of the Palestinians was the outcome of a war that got forced upon them by Arab states rather than a deliberate systemic act of ethnic cleansing. And I also want to point out, even within the Israeli state and view, and within their narrative, some so-called Israeli new historians, they call themselves, have documented Israeli leaders did expel Palestinians and the displacement was significant. But they don't accept the full narrative that 780,000 were basically shipped out or killed on the spot. 750,000, I should correct. The UN, the international bodies, widely recognize Nakba as an historical reality of mass displacement. Those facts can't be denied. But how and why and the suffering and who continues to suffer? That has given rise to the anti-Semitism, I should say, and, of course, the violence against Jews in general and against Israel. And, of course, on the other side, you hear, well, what would you do if they came and took away your family and destroyed and took over your home? We're talking about generations, not just the last 78 years. This is festered for generations and continues. My commentary today is I was referring to some quotes by Golda Meir. And the one that I've always liked, I wish could be applied here. Regardless of your view on what happened in 48 and since, or continuing, she said, we will have peace when our enemies love their children more than they hate us. That applies both ways. Both ways. Coming up, the survey about do you believe Trump was the target of an assassination? And what about UFOs? Still to come.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
When insurance companies know you're represented by Under Law, they know Under is not going to let you be pushed around. Their reputation is built on years of courtroom battles. If you suffer an injury or damage to your property, serve the insurance company notice. You have Under Law on your side, a St. Louis firm you can trust to protect you at every term. Don't settle for less. You want to win? Believe me, Under wins. Under, O-N-D-E-R, underlaw.com. McGuire Moving is silver certified, which means they are great at relocating senior citizens. In fact, McGuire is a household name because McGuire understands the stress involved when moving older adults. So if you or family members need help moving, I highly recommend McGuire Moving. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. Get a free in-home estimate. McGuireMoving.com. When I have business clients or guests from out of town, I often take them to Cafe Napoli. I know they're going to enjoy any of the Napoli locations. Cafe Napoli in Clayton, Napoli 2 in Town and Country, Napoli 3 in St. Charles, next to Napoli C, Napoli Kirkwood, or Napoli Brothers Pizza and Pasta in the Chesterfield Valley. Excellent food and intellectual conversation. If they bring the intellectual conversation. And NapoliSTL.com. NapoliSTL.com. You should know that when I endorse Wellington Environmental, it's because I believe and know they will do you right. Wellington takes pride in providing homeowners and businesses whatever they need. You need some dustless blasting? They will take care of that. You need some mold radiation? They can do that. They take pride in training their team to perform multiple services and having the equipment ready to get jobs finished. That's important to you. You make just one call, and you call a company that's been around for more than 35 years with more than 45 technicians in the field. Most of you know finding good workers, then having them show up on time could be difficult. Not for Wellington Environmental. They're there at the designated time, ready to go. Check them out to see what they could do for you. Dustless blasting or anything else you need. Wellington Environmental, 314-644-4930. 314-644-4930. Be well with Wellington.
This is News Talk STL.
Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
What you say?
Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
All right, hit the road, Jack. I've always liked that song. Just really liked it. And Ray Charles doing that. Outstanding. I want to share something with you off the beginning here. This was sent to me by my boots on the ground correspondent in Chicago. He calls through a lot of material that I would never get a chance to look at. This is from a publication called Hot Air. Hot Air has basically taking, I would say, not just news, but comments and so forth. They bill themselves as focusing as a leading conservative blog, reference politics, culture, media, breaking news. Now, again, I want you to understand the source. But they're talking about an author and professor, Jonathan Haidt, and I hope I'm pronouncing it right, HIDT, selected as NYU's graduate speaker this year. And supposedly, and not surprisingly, they say, a woke contingent of students quick to demand someone else. And why? Because they say his views about DEI are problematic. In fact, the Student Government Assembly condemned the selection of this guy. He wrote a book titled The Anxious Generation. I'll explain that in a moment. But the Student Government Assembly called his selection, quote, a regression from previous commencement speakers, because they've had years of progressive speakers appearing. And they asked the executive or the leaders of the university to reconsider, because students are astonished by the university's inability to leverage its vast network and unique connections to secure a speaker whose scholarship and global contributions more accurately reflect the values and diversity of its graduates. They want someone again to come in and cry out, DEI, DEI for everybody. This book that the speaker had written, The Anxious Generation, and that was going to be the focus of his presentation, was about how cell phones and social media seem to be contributing to a mental health crisis among young people. But the student government said, oh, we don't understand that. We don't believe that. That's not going to be relevant to us. I think it's damn relevant. But, of course, they're entitled to their opinion. According to the student government statement, by elevating a platform that treats device-free as a radical act, the university is effectively disregarding the very real-world crisis and systemic hurdles that have defined our graduates' experiences. How many of you think have been involved with cell phones in social media and things that happen on there shaping their minds? But the statement also read, in a world marked by sustained attacks on higher education, the global unraveling of diversity and equity and inclusivism, which has only deepened inequities, this is not the appropriate individual to address the class of 2026. The graduates want to hear from somebody that will talk how you can go out there and take over the world and be woke everywhere. Now, some of the NYU students say, we're not trying to silence him. In fact, the outgoing sophomore class president said, I don't think students saying the speaker does not represent our values is the same as saying students are being incapable of hearing opposing viewpoints. Well, yes, you are. You don't want to hear them. But again, based on what it appeared to be, this guy was simply going to be talking about how cell phones and social media have affected and created a mental crisis for our young people. Now, you can tie that to woke and DEI just as clear as you can tie it to cotton candy and suddenly an urge for it. They have had in the past, one of their noted speakers was Justice Sotomayor. Well, obviously, she's going to be preaching what they want to hear. And they had Taylor Swift. How do you relate those two? I have no idea. Yeah, I was thinking about adding one letter in front of that no idea. I'll let you add the letter. I'd mentioned earlier there's issues about this UFOs continuing to surface. And, of course, since supposedly most of them have been released, and I had George Norrie of Coast to Coast on the other day talking about it, he thinks there's a lot more being held back. There are apparently at least almost 50 classified tapes that have not been released, videos, photographs, whatever they might be, but supposedly will be released. There's a Rear Admiral, retired, Kim Gallaudet, who is a leading voice in America when it comes to UFOs, or UAP, if you want to state that. In Austin last year, he attended the Age of Disclosure dealing with this. He said, I've not seen an alien, and we don't even, that's not really the best term in addition to extraterrestrial, because we really don't know what is, where they come from, what their nature is, and their intentions. He said, I can say we are aware of a high-order, non-human intelligence that direct the movement of these phenomena. I've not seen one, but then what I do know is that the nature of some of these craft is so advanced, so apparently are obliviously under intelligent control, that the only conclusion we can make and has been made by those I work with on this is that there is some kind of higher order of non-human. Are you listening? Are you listening to me? There is some kind of higher order of non-human intelligence directing them. And he continues, and I know this from the fact that I've seen data videos of objects that are so clearly not ours or our adversaries, objects that move between the ocean and the atmosphere and back without any visible interruption. In disturbance of the sea surface, high rates of speed, and we don't have the technology to do that. Again, he's saying, I have not seen them, but I think these devices exist and they're controlled by, to use his quote again, going right back to what he said last year in Austin, I do know the nature of some of these craft is so advanced, so apparently or obviously under intelligent control, that the only conclusion we can make and has been made, there's some kind of higher order of non-human intelligence directing them. Does that change your view to any extent? While we're asking for your view, what do you think about this recent survey that 3 in 10 Americans, 3 in 10, believe at least one of the assassination attempts on President Trump was staged? This is a NewsGuard YouGov survey dealing with attempts to take Trump's life. 1,000 Americans asked, and supposedly if it's done right, it's properly weighted demographics, age, race, ethnicity, whatever. Do you believe any of the three attempts at Trump's life, including the Butler, Pennsylvania shooting, 2024? What about the incident at the West Palm Beach golf course the same year? And of course, more recently, the White House Correspondents' Dinner just weeks ago. Do you think they were legitimate? For the Butler shooting, which saw a bullet nearly miss Trump's skull and did go forward and kill a man, at least one of the shots fired, 47% believe that was a real attempt. Only 47%. And yet the evidence is so clear. Somebody was shooting because a man in the stands shielding his wife and children died, struck by a bullet, as were two others. But they didn't die. 29%, even with that, say, oh, I just don't know. You're an idiot. You're an idiot. But the bigger idiot is 24% believe, the whole thing was staged. They walk among us. And I'm afraid they also cast votes. 48% believe the attempt on Trump's life at the Trump International Golf Club was a real attempt to take his life. Again, this is a guy they found in the bushes alongside the roadway just at the edge of the golf course, knowing the course he was playing that day and where he would be walking. Again, 48% say they think that was a real attempt. 36% not sure. 16%, it's staged. The guy arrested has been convicted for the attempted assassination. 45% believe the recent event at the White House correspondence shooting was a legitimate effort. 32% not sure. I can see that you might not be too sure on that. The guy never got inside the room. 24% again say it was staged. Well, there's some monkey out there that decided, I'm willing to act like the stooge to run through the barrier and shoot at Secret Service and take a chance of being killed. That's quite an event to stage, right? All right, Trump wrapped up his visit in Beijing with Premier Xi. And did we get anything out of it? Well, yes, and maybe not.
I mean, the last time we signed like 36 deals, this time it's much bigger than that. Talked about soybeans for our farmers. They're going to do a lot of soybeans for our farmers. They're going to be buying a lot of our farm product, which is great. You know, they have an unlimited appetite, as the expression goes. They can buy as much as they, when you have that many people, they need it. And we have the best product. We're the best, some of the best of everything.
Now, that is something Missouri Senator Schmidt said I really would like to see, help for our farmers. In the last hour, I had Gordon G. Chang on, an expert on China, and he says, you know, it could be a good deal, but we don't know the full details, and too many times China kind of says we will do this, and they don't follow through properly and fully. So, yeah, we need to wait and see. The other big deal that Trump came away with, he said China says it will buy 200 Boeing jets, and it could go up to 750. He announced the Boeing jet order. Beijing still supposedly not saying anything. And ironically, even with that news, Boeing stock dropped almost 5% today. Why? Well, investors expected a larger China order, possibly 500 planes. Boeing currently has over 6,800 unfilled jet orders globally. And China, which accounts for more than 20% of Boeing deliveries from 2010 to 2019, needs 8,800 planes in 20 years. So the stockholders believe that even if they go through with the 200, maybe up to 750, Stockholders say the bid, the offer, is not big enough. One of the other things that Trump did not come away with, and we keep pushing, and I'm going to continue pushing, but it maybe has to just start in our backyard. I think it should. We rely heavily on China for pharmaceutical products. Roughly 90% of our U.S. prescription drug inputs imported. India supplying about half of the finished medicines. But China is a leading supplier for U.S. pharmaceutical imports. Nearly 700 medicines used in our nation contain at least one chemical ingredient sourced only in China. That's got to stop. What kind of drugs are we talking about? They're not all prescription drugs. You take ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin, that's one of them. Acetaminophen, Tylenol, that's another one. Penicillin, another. We've got to move away from relying on China for our drug source of any type. And Gordon Chang says we have all of those ingredients here. Regulations by green god altar worshiping Democrats have prevented us from mining for what we need. Same thing with lithium. So we definitely need to see a change sooner than later. Wishing you a great weekend. We will be back with you come Monday. I expect you to be in your seat for news, opinion, analysis, and education on Larry Connors USA. And remember our pledge, one nation under God.
You can follow Larry on Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.